Here we are again making this place sacred. Not because it's got pews or hymnals, not because there is a pulpit or a steeple anywhere in sight, but because you are here. Let us begin in worship by giving worth to all we want out of life. Join me in inviting our best selves and a spirit of true peace and justice into this place by bringing our full hearts and minds and spirits into a world made fair, beginning now. Please join me in a spirit of prayer. So many candles lit along the windows, such full lives here today. There's so many great joys we bring with us for which it is easy to be thankful. For life and love, the gift of our friends, the gift of a community like this where we may seek the truth wherever it is found. But there is much that we bring with us that is not a joy. If prayer worked like magic, we could pray that we would forever be healthy, that we would have peace tomorrow, that there would be justice everywhere. But as we know, does not work like magic, and life will be a challenge. In the midst of injustice, let us have courage. In the midst of anxiety and fear, let us have the peace of our community and the warmth of love. And may we find somewhere a still voice of peace that passes all understanding in this day and in all of our lives. May it be so. Although I was laughing when I heard this, I have to admit to you that I had to cringe a little bit also. Because this was one of the most accurate portrayals of someone stumbling through a definition of Unitarian Universalism that I've ever seen. And I saw it on a 2006 episode of The Colbert Report. After Stephen Colbert recites the entire Nicene Creed from memory, he then asks one of his staff members, Bobby, what religion he's a part of. When Bobby says, well, I'm a Unitarian, Colbert asks him, oh, so you're a Christian too, right? Here's Bobby's response. Well, I incorporate Christian values as well as aspects of many other religious traditions into my belief in God, and well, I don't want to imply that I think God exists or that God doesn't exist or that it matters to it or he or whoever what I do or do not believe. What's important is that it's my choice, and that's really what holds the Unitarians together. A very confused Stephen Colbert then asks him, so do you celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah? To which Bobby replies, sure. So, to hit this close to home on that satire, I think that one of his writers either knows or is a Unitarian Universalist. It is not necessarily an easy thing to explain a liberal religious community in a few breaths. I wonder if anybody ever here has felt like Bobby, stumbling over our definition of who we are, apologizing for it before the words even come out of our mouth, getting to this long rant in which we've actually said nothing at all. It would be a lot easier sometimes if we had our own version of the Nicene Creed. But boy, that's not the religion we signed up for. I think that my mixed reaction to these portrayals of definitions of UUism in the media push my buttons about the anxiety I have of explaining what it is we do and how we tell the world about it. Most of the time when my friends and family ask me what it is goes on at a Unitarian church, I give them a brief explanation and a little bit of history, but then lately I've started ending it with, well, you know, the best way to find out is to come and see for yourself. Here's where we're located. After some time and experience, most of the people close to me in my life get it, but not everybody. And I have to tell you, there is one response that gets me every time. So often I'll be wearing a UU t-shirt at a restaurant, or I'm sitting on a plane and the stranger next to me wants to know what I do for a living. So we get into this long discussion and I tell them about our vision of a world made fair where all people deserve love, where all religious traditions have value and truth, and where we believe in deeds, not creeds. And sometimes I get the response, oh, well, that's nice. Unitarian Universalism sounds like a really easy religion. I can tell you, trying to live out the values that we talk about in this place, trying to make real the faith that I've read about, heard about, experienced, is not an easy thing. Couldn't be further from the truth. It's not easy to admit that no religious tradition has a monopoly on truth, including our own. It's not easy to cast out superstition that doesn't suit us anymore, but still bring metaphor and poetry and awe into my spiritual life. It is not easy to join together in a group of people who often have very different visions of where we should be going. The idea that I should imagine that every part of creation and every single person on this world, no matter how much I disagree with them, deserves love. That is one of the most radical, trying things I could ever be asked to do in religion. At our best, this community does not practice easy religion. But we do sometimes. It's really easy for me to call myself a liberal, tolerant, and open-minded man. It's easy for me to put my coexist bumper sticker on my car and scream at the driver next to me because his bumper sticker does not reflect my open-minded views. It is easy for me to think that I know all I need to know about somebody by how they voted in the last election. It is easy for us to put a poster on the wall and call ourselves a welcoming congregation and then ignore visitors in coffee hour. How many times have I sat in pews in a church just like this and sang, we're going to sit at the welcome table, or enter, rejoice, and come in, and then realize that I haven't said hello to the person who's sitting right next to me in the seats. It's easy to talk about how many different religious beliefs exist in a place like this and never talk about them. It would be easy to imagine that the reason we come into a place like this is to be around like-minded people or to be entertained, instead of being transformed in love. This kind of spiritual life, this kind of freedom that we have in a UU community that exists in really no other religion the way it does here, has the opportunity to be easy. We can choose that route all the time, or we can choose something else. In 1900, the Universalist minister, Reverend Frederick William Perkins, wrote this text called Why I Am a Universalist. And in part of this, he explained that for him, the religion of his day, this is 108 years ago, of Universalist Christianity, the core of that for him rested not in having the right doctrine or the right facts, but in living a life in which he believed in an endless power of love. That an easy religion thinks it's finished when it gets it right. And a challenging religion asks you to go a little deeper. Here's what he said. The heretic, to the universalist, is not the man who denies some accuracy of a method of creation portrayed in the book of Genesis. The heretic, to the universalist, is one who distrusts in the love of God. It is the depth and earnestness of my religion, and not the correctness of its scholarship, that is my primary concern. It's not easy to have this kind of depth. I don't know about you, but I'm tempted in a place like this where I'm learning so much to think that if I simply get the facts right, I'm going to be a better person. That if I just learn enough, I'm going to be well on my way to the good life. We Unitarian Universalists are very good at getting facts. We tend to be a very curious people. We're voracious readers who are searching after knowledge wherever we can find it. Sometimes the temptation is for us to think that that's all we're here for. A teacher of mine once challenged me to always ask three questions in all of my spiritual life. What? So what? And now what? Unitarian Universalists have the what part of the equation down like nobody's business. We can get you some information. It's getting a lot easier in our society to carry knowledge with us. But every imaginable portable electronic device that's got thousands of libraries inside of it, we can Google anything we want to. What's going to be hard is for us to take that new knowledge about the world and ourselves and ask, so what? How is this going to change me? How does knowing this help me to fashion a life of justice or love and trust the world? An easy move for me sometimes is to believe that this community that values my self-expression and knowledge values those things more than it does me having understanding of other people. I can believe that I displayed the highest amount of virtue because I sat strong in the face of someone's anger, or because I really proved myself to my friends and family at Thanksgiving because they didn't agree with me on politics or religion. But the challenge is for me to stand in the same face of that disagreement or anger and ask, I wonder why you're hurting. I wonder how this person is hurting and how I might help heal them. I wonder what they're celebrating and how I can share in their joy. This type of free mind calls us to bring what Suzuki Roshi called a beginner's mind to all people in the world. In terms that more Unitarian Universalists use often, a search for meaning that is both free and responsible is going to challenge us to have some radical new forms of understanding. I think that one of the most profound examples of this kind of religious depth came from a man named Christer Stendahl. He's a recently deceased Swedish theologian, and he formerly served as the dean of the seminary I went to. In 1985, there was a new Mormon temple being built in Stockholm. There was a lot of opposition to it in the town. And so Christer Stendahl showed up at all the city meetings and the meetings of the religious councils and offered three suggestions for interfaith work and ecumenical work. Now, since almost everything we do in a Unitarian Universalist context is just a little bit interfaith, I thought this would be helpful for us. He calls them the three rules of religious understanding. They're really simple in their wording, but I think they leave no room for the easy road in religion. Rule one. When you're trying to understand another religion, you should ask that religion's adherents, not its enemies. Our society lately has become really comfortable with right and wrong. Black and white with little shade of gray. I wonder how much misinformation and distrust and fear we could have avoided in the last 7 years if the majority of our citizens found out about Islam from Muslims instead of from cable news or an email from a friend. I have to say, I don't think we have been immune from this infection of polarity either. How much of the talk that we do as Unitarian Universalists about traditional Christianity or our evangelical brothers and sisters comes to us from its critics and its enemies, and not its followers. Christer's second rule of religious understanding says this: don't compare your best to their worst. I think this is the one I have the most trouble following. I think we have a lot of best here. In fact, if I didn't think that this was the best religious tradition I could possibly be a part of, I wouldn't be wasting my time. I'd be somewhere else this Sunday morning. I'm so proud of the fact that our heritage has fought for reason, tolerance, and justice at any cost. That the Universalists were the first denominational body to ever ordain a woman in this country. That we've been at the forefront of fighting for the rights and equality of the LGBT community. That we have made great efforts toward anti-racism and anti-oppression and so many other issues. But how many of us and myself included, raising a big hand here, define who we are by what we're not. How often do we start off a discussion about this place by saying, well, you know, opposed to that religion, which tells you you can't do this or that, we say it's okay. A lot of us are just now coming out of another place, or we're trying out a spiritual home for the first time in a long time. And it's understandable that we would understand who we are by separating ourselves from that past a bit. But when we start taking responsibility for our religious lives again, the easy road will be to say, I know who I am because I'm not one of them. It is going to be very hard to say, I know who we are because we believe in the power of life and the transformative power of love. I know who I am because this is what I've experienced. Sindall's third and final rule of religious understanding goes like this. Leave some room for holy envy. By this, he means to find another part of a tradition or person that you admire and you wish was incorporated into your own life. For me, the easy path here often looks a lot more like holy pride than holy envy. I get so excited that I finally found a tradition that I can be authentic and religious at the same time, that I can bring my whole mind and my doubts, and I'm with these well-educated, intelligent, curious people. Sometimes I start to believe that we're more evolved than other people. I mean, I wonder if anybody else has, just a little bit, ever believed that because of what we do here, we're more human than somebody else. I catch myself thinking, I don't ever want to talk to one of them again, because you know they won't even talk to people that disagree with them. I've said that. This is when I use my holy pride to build up walls. And it is very easy to feel safe inside them. I have to say that I think these rules of religious understanding could be just as valuable if we use them to understand ourselves as well. Ask the adherents, not the enemies. Don't compare your best to their worst, and leave some room for holy envy. I wonder what it might look like in a period of terrible self-doubt or criticism to take those rules and then ask of ourselves. When you're trying to understand yourself, ask your supporters, not your critics. Count the yes votes in life, not the mistakes. Don't always compare the worst of yourself to the best of someone else. And do leave some room for holy envy. But don't think that what you have right now isn't sacred already. This being free in religion business is not easy. If you want proof of that, go to a committee meeting at any church in town, and you will find out that it is hard to be in a place where you're not expected to all believe the same thing. But nowhere in our history or our literature were we promised an easy ride. I think it's very interesting that in the Hebrew scriptures, in the narrative of the Exodus, the Israelites wait exactly one verse after celebrating their release from the Egyptians before they start complaining about their new freedom. In Exodus 14 and 15, Moses has just finished leading this small group of escaped slaves out of this camp. The sea miraculously parts for them. They move through. The sea swallows up their enemies, and they arrive at the other shore unharmed, celebrating with song. Their celebration hymn reads like this. With your unfailing love, you led the people you have redeemed. In your might, you guide them to their new sacred home. So they start their journey in the first verse of chapter 16, and the second verse sounds like this. There, too, the whole community of Israel complained to Moses and Aaron. If only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt, they moaned. There we sat around pots that were filled with meat, and we ate all the bread we wanted. But now you brought us out here into the wilderness to starve us all to death. This freedom business is hard. How much of our society lately has thought that it would be better if we went back to Egypt, where we had less freedom but more security? I think that it's just as hard in a place like this, too. I know that I sometimes kind of nostalgically yearn for this place where, gosh, if we just all knew exactly what we believed, it would be a lot easier. Or if we just had one thing I could tell my friends and family about UUism, it would make it every so simpler. But we know it wasn't better in Egypt. We have chosen a free religious life where each of us comes to this place to bring what truth we've found. The word heretic just means one who chooses. We have chosen to live together in a place that affirms that we don't have to think alike to love alike. We've chosen to be together in a place where we can cast off rituals and myth and stories that don't mean anything to us in their literal sense, but we can still use them and have poetry and awe in our life. In the invocation that's commonly used here, the statement is that we've chosen to live a life where the questions are more profound than the answers. My friends, what this community and this place has to offer us will not be easy. And I know that for any visitors or newcomers, I'm providing about the worst sell of our religion that I possibly could. It is not easy, but it is worth it. This free spiritual life calls us not to build walls, but to dig wells. Wells from which we can all draw. Not to just throw away those old stories from our religious life and define ourselves by what we're not, but to be green in our spirituality and reuse and recycle those stories in a way that gives meaning for us now. To be mature and responsible with the way that we approach this place. It calls us to see the best in others and ourselves. In this place, no minister or denominational figure, no pope or bishop or staff member is going to present you with a statement of faith. Nobody's going to tell you how you should believe. The future of a free faith is not dependent on any one person. It's dependent on every one of us. I'll leave today with a challenge from the UU minister, Reverend Rebecca Parker. These words might be familiar to some of you. Your gifts, whatever it is you discover them to be, can be used to either bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of your hands, the reaches of your heart, the gift of speaking or listening or imagining or waiting, all of these could serve to feed the hungry, to bind up wounds or welcome strangers, to praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. But each one of these can also draw down prison doors, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question, she asks. What will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. My friends, in a religion that is not easy, it's up to each of us and no one else to offer such a blessing to our world. It won't be simple, but it is ours to make real. What better time than now? Amen.